What's your name and where were you born?
My name is Michelle Ball and I was born in France.
What year?
1936.
And your age?
67.
Okay. Okay. You said that you remember the Nazis barging in and knocking on your door?
Oh, yeah.
Alright, tell me a little bit about that. What do you remember? And did they barge in or did they, like, knock? Or what were they looking for?
They don't knock. They were looking for my brother. Because my brother is, like, 15 years older than me. So then he was 20. And, they wanted him to serve for them. So, and he didn't want to. He said, he'd rather die. So he ran away. But then the Gestapo, that's them, like military police, came to our door, guns drawn, and they searched everywhere. And of course they didn't find him. So my dad just came, was discharged from the military. He was in World War One and Two, my father was. And he just got discharged and he was home. And, they thought that they were going to kill us all, but they didn't, obviously. And but they issued a warrant, if you will. A hit is more like it, that to shoot him on sight.
Your brother? Well,
yeah. He had 48 hours to report if he, they would shoot him on sight, no questions asked. So it was. And they came in here and they just come in your house and we didn't have any food, not much. So they would bring food and make my mother cook for them. And they would make me eat first, just in case she would poison the food. So they make me eat first. So while they were around, I did eat pretty good.
So did he report back to...
No.
No, he didn't?
No. They never did find him. He joined the underground.
The underground?
Mm-hmm. And then he didn't come out until we were freed by the Americans.
What do you mean when he joined the underground?
Well, he just... there was a lot of people that... men, and then women too, but mostly men, that they weren't in the military, but they were helping the Allies. They were like spies, if you will, or snipers, or, you know, they did a lot, but underground, that means hidden, you know, they would hide in the woods, in caves and stuff like that, and then we brought things that they feel that the military should know about, you know, activities from the Nazis and so on and so forth, or even report people, French people, that would help the Nazis, because there was some, you know, that did that to be kept safe, you see. They would denounce, they would tell on other people and have other people arrested, their own neighbors, just to stay in good with the Nazis. Oh, yeah.
How many years did he do that?
Well, let me see now. He was in there, gosh. Oh. I think about at least two years, if not more. Probably the last 2 years of the war. So, because it ended, well, we were freed in 44, June 44. We were freed. Because, see, I only lived like an hour's drive from the beaches of Normandy when they had that D-Day, that big. We could feel the ground move when they hit from the battles. And we could see the fires in the horizon at night. Yeah. Yeah.
How did you get out of France? When did you decide to leave?
And why? You mean, when did I come here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I did decide to leave. I mean, I loved my country and, of course, my parents, my family. But I met a GI that was in the Air Force. And they had a big Air Force base right next to my village where I lived. That was a French base, then a Luftwaffe, a German base, and then the Americans bought the land and stuff and made it bigger, and they had the Air Force was there. And then now it's a French base again. But anyways, yeah, I met him at a dance and fell in love, and he didn't speak French and I didn't speak English, but there you go. I was 19. So that's all. I came here. I came here in 1956.
Did anybody else of your family come here?
No.
Oh, just you?
Yes, me. Yeah. It was hard. But I learned to speak English and read it and write it within 6 months I was here, because I didn't speak it when I came here.
What was your reaction when you told your family you're moving here?
Well, you know, they accepted it. They were sad to see me go, but they accepted it, you know. They didn't stand in my way, so. But I went back many times, you know, to visit and stuff.
So did he pay for, like, you to get over here? Or did he have to have, like, money?
Well, he came back. Well, no, we got married in France, all right? And I had to go through a lot to get married to him. I had to go to the American embassy and a whole bunch of papers, and you would not believe. So I didn't have all my papers to have, because I needed a permanent visa in order to stay here. Because I had to be here 5 years before I could apply for my American citizenship. So he got discharged from the Air Force in August of 56. We got married in November of 55. He got discharged in August of 56, but I couldn't come with him because I didn't have my papers. So I didn't come here until November, 1 month before my son was born. So I came by a ship because I was 8 months pregnant, so they wouldn't take me by plane back then. So 5 days seasick, I just wanted to die. It was bad. And when I got to New York, I had never seen a skyscraper before. We didn't have them in France. And I went, I thought I was on Mars or somewhere. I didn't. It was overwhelming, to say the least. Yeah.
What hardships did you face because you couldn't speak English when you first arrived?
Well, the hardship was is not to understand people when they spoke or to read signs. Or that's why I was born and determined to teach myself. I didn't go to school or nothing. I just got the French and English dictionary and watched TV, and that's how I learned to speak English.
So did you not go anywhere without a translator for a while?
Well, no, I didn't go anywhere without my husband. Number one, I didn't have a driver's license, so I couldn't, you know. And I only went with him because then while he was in France, he did pick up some French, so we could communicate somewhat. But yeah, it was hard. It was, and the style of life is different. The food, the way people, well, the style of life is different than what I was accustomed to. So it took a little getting used to, but it didn't take me too long. Like I say, within 6 months I could, well, actually I could read and write English before I could actually speak it, because I was afraid not to pronounce it like it's supposed to be pronounced, you know, and I was afraid to talk. And some people are cruel, actually. Maybe they don't mean to be, but they make you repeat. They don't try to understand what you're trying to say, and they make you repeat. And when you're not sure of yourself to begin with, and they make you repeat, well, that cheers you right there, because then you go, you know, it's upsetting. So that was, I would say that was the worst for me, is the language barrier. Yep.
Did you face discrimination, like, in your early years here?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't use the word discrimination. Basically, this, like, when people look at you like you have an accent and you're trying to, you know, and they're not really helpful. like I said, by making you repeat and stuff like that, like, ha-ha, but I'm thinking, you know what? I'm smarter than you. I speak two languages. How many do you speak? I'm thinking to myself. So it didn't bother me, because I'm a strong person, strong character. I'm as good as anybody that ever lived. That's the way I feel. I'm not better than anybody, but I'm as good. And that's the way you have to be, because otherwise, you'll never make it, you know? So I'm tough. So no, I I can't say that I was discriminated against. You know,
mm-hmm. No. How long did you have to study for the test, and how was it taking the test to be a citizen?
Oh well, number one, they kind of recommended that I go to high school to take those night classes on the Constitution of the United States and all that stuff, and I hate school. Okay, I always did. But, I mean, I did have good grades, though. So I said, no, I'm not going back to school. Nope. I said, is there anything else I can do? I said, well, yeah. The INS sent me a book on all about the constitutions and all that good stuff. I said, well, you're doing it the hard way, but you read that book and it'll tell you what you need to know. And when you feel you're ready, make an appointment, you know. Well, the test back then, it's different today, I'm sure, but back then, number one, you had to be 5 years or more in the U.S. You had to know an American citizen that was born here for that length of time or longer, that could vouch for your character and all that stuff. Well, we moved quite a bit, so it was kind of hard. So actually, I had been in the U.S. 7 years before I actually applied. 7 years? No. No, let me think. I came here in 56. Yes, more than that. 65 I got my citizenship. So that's what? 9 years. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 9 years. And so when I was ready, I felt I knew the test is an oral test. And the judge gives it to you. It's you and the judge face to face. You just want to die. They asked you questions you would not believe, personal question. And he's not smiling either. And you better, because he already knows the answer. He already knows. So he can tell if you're lying or not, because see, they research way back in your family and everything else. If you, like they ask me, while you're young, you don't have a politics choice yet. I said no. And he says, well, is there anybody in your family ever or is communist? I said, no. He says, you sure you don't want to think about that? I'm panicking. I said, I didn't know what to say. I said, well, not that I know of. I know my dad wasn't, or my mom. And then I thought back, I said, My brother, when he was young, a young guy, and they went out with buddies and they had a few drinks and, you know, and they talked him into joining the Communist Party. But when he sobered up and realized, he retracted everything. You know, they knew about that. They knew about it. And I went, you know? Yeah, I said, well, so I explained, he said, okay, that's right. And stuff like that. They asked me, were you a prostitute? No. I looked at him, I didn't know what to say, you know. I dare you ask me this question? He said, answer yes or no. I said, well, no. Because a lot of them did. A lot of them girls, the street girls, you know, they wanted to come here so bad that they'll just grab onto any GIs and come over here. I mean, me. It wasn't the case, of course, because, I mean, I love my family, I love my country. I didn't never had any intention of wanting to come here. But now, I'm glad I did, because I wouldn't go back to France for nothing. I mean, I'd go back to visit, but I wouldn't. This is the country to be in, trust me.
So. Well, why is it? Why is it there is such a big difference between France and the U.S.? What's different that you like about
custom,
it?
Custom. Well, I like the practicality of the United States. People are practical. Anything to make life easier, the United States, that's the place to be. Yeah, I would say that's what I like about it. And the people, you might not believe this, but the people are very friendly in the United States overall, in comparison of other countries. Because my brother, when he came to visit, the first time he came here, they flew to Atlanta, and they had to take another plane to come to Detroit. And they couldn't believe, they don't speak English, and they could not believe how friendly the Americans are. You know, you're used to it, you live here.
Yeah.
But as you go to, I know when I go back to France, see, I still speak French, but I speak the old French, the French of the 50s, all right? And they think I'm French-Canadian. So, you know, you can't win. I know I have still an accent. I'll die with one, I'm sure. But, no, my brother was very impressed with it. The United States, the way things are, how late the stores are open. You don't have that in France. Like if you don't do your shopping before noon, you're dead. You gotta wait until 2 because that's their lunch time. Post office, everything closes.
For just an hour, a couple hours?
Yeah, lunch. So if you don't do what you have to do before noon, you have to wait until 2. That's the way it is. They don't cater to the people. They don't. Naturally, it's changing already. You know, it's changing. But I'm talking when I live there, you know. But it's still quite a bit like that still. But they have bigger stores, something like you have Meijer, you know, that kind of store they do. But the Americans built those when they were over there. Then the president in Europe to get the Americans out. So everything that the American builds, they donated, hospitals, stuff like that, they let, what are they going to do, blow them up? So it was donated. Yeah.
You said you'd probably die with an accent. Do you have a change in your accent since you've been here for so long? Is it?
Well, yeah, like I say, I mean, to you, I have an accent, a French accent. But like I say, when I speak French in France, then I picked up some of the American accent, whatever that is, but to them I sound like I'm French-Canadian. So I have an accent when I speak French and I have an accent when I speak English, so there you go.
Okay, the GI that you married, was he from Michigan?
Well, yeah, he was from Lincoln Park, but he was born in Nova Scotia, and then he came to the U.S. when he was like 10 years old or something like that.
Okay, how did you come to settle in Monroe?
It just happened. Like I say, his parents lived in Lincoln Park, so we basically lived in the area. And then we moved to Seattle, Washington. We both, my husband and I, worked for Boeing. And then we got laid off, so we came back to Michigan. So we came back to, we lived in Romulus, you know, like in the area, you know, southeast part of Michigan. And basically we wanted to kind of get away from the big city, the suburb and stuff, and we started coming down this way. Maybe because I was born and raised out in the country, and my husband liked the country too, so that's how come we came to be down here. We like it here.
What did he do for a living? Would you guys?
Well, basically, when he got out of the service, he was a spray painter. He painted like cars. Well, that's what he did at Boeing. He painted the logo on the aircraft at Boeing. So that was his main trade. And then he got sick back in 76, and then he was on medical. Disability, and then he didn't work after that. He couldn't. and then he passed away in 97. Yeah. And meanwhile, I worked, you know, I worked at Boeing when I came back here. I worked at a contract security guard for Detroit Edison, and then after a year and a half, I got hired by Detroit Edison. Then I retired from Detroit Edison. Now I'm retired. No, we didn't really travel a lot. We basically, we lived in Linton Park and Allen Park for about a couple of years. And then there was no work in Michigan at this time. So my husband's uncle was a foreman for Boeing in Seattle. And so I went back to France. I had two children, and my son that was 2.5, and Joelle, my first girl, she was 6 months old. So I went back to France for a couple of months to visit so my parents could see my children. And meantime, my husband went to Seattle, Washington. They got hired at Boeing. When I came back from France, I flew directly to Seattle, and we lived there. We lived in Washington just outside Seattle in Renton, where the plant was, for 9 years. Yeah. Then we both got laid off. Well, I didn't work the whole time, all 9 years. I only worked for Boeing a couple of years. Because when I came back, then I had three more children. So I had five children altogether. So.
Does your children speak any French?
Well, my youngest, a little bit, she took French, but, you know, taking French in the classroom and going to the country and speak it, it's two different things, trust me.
How so?
Because you learn the proper way of saying things in school, where you go to the country, well, they speak a lot of slang and, you know, like here, you know, we don't speak proper English, we speak American, for one thing. And we use a lot of the slang, too, you know. So it's the same as in any country, so.
Do they go back with you?
Well, I took my youngest girl with me, and then I took my third daughter. When she graduated from high school, she came with me, and the following year, I took her sister. They liked it. Well, they liked Paris, of course, and but you know, it gets annoying after a while that to hear you don't hear your language spoken. You know, you hear like a bunch of noise, and it annoys me. Even so, I understand French. It annoys me after a while. I want to come home. This is here. This is home. I want to come home. And with all the stuff that goes on, too, with the Middle East and all that. Mm-hmm. My brother, I talked to him last Sunday, and he said, well, he's 81 years old now. He said, you're going to come and visit this year? I really don't want to. I mean, I want to see him, but I'm afraid to go over there anymore because there is so many Middle Eastern people over there. You don't know the good from the bad, you know? And they, especially the way things are right now, I'm just too scared. I just, you know, because these people, they're so far out. I mean, they're at the point, I don't think they know what they're fighting for. Well, the main thing, they're upset because the United States support Israel. That's the big thing. That's the big thing. Because the Arabs hate the Jews, all right? The Muslims, they hate the Jews. And it's basically a religious war. Like it was always way back, even before Jesus was born. It's always about religion, and it's sad. It's sad, because everybody should respect everybody else's religion. And that's sad, you know, like your politics. You get the right to feel the way you do. but don't try to dump it on other people. That's the thing that upsets me, you know? I respect the way you feel about things, but I expect you to respect the way I feel about things, and just leave it be, you know? That way, if everybody was like that, there wouldn't be no war, you know? Everybody would get along. But oh no, my way is better than yours, and they're just like little kids fighting over a toy, except that they're more dangerous. Scary.
Do you visit less now because of the whole situation?
Yeah.
How often?
Well, I didn't go last year. I went, the last time I went was in 2002.
Prior to this whole situation, how?
Well, I went almost every year. Well, for maybe 4 or 5 years in a row, I went about every year. But now I'm leery. I mean, you get even in the airport, you know, I'm scared in the airport. Every time I see him, it's sad to say, and I know people is going to think, oh yes, he's prejudiced. Well, believe me, I worked with people from the Middle East. They are different. They're different than us. They're different. They think different. They see things different. It's the way they are. That's the way they are. They're scary. They're scary people.
Where'd you work with a man?
Well, I worked, when I got out of school in France, I worked in a factory. And there were some Arabs there. And one in particular, he was like maybe a year older than me, good looking guy. And he liked me. And, but even the girls in France, even, not so much now. I mean, I don't know how it is now, but back then, they wouldn't even go out with them or date or nothing because of their reputation. They own you. What do you think their women wear a veil and all that? Think about it. They own you. They can go and run around with other women, that's fine. They can have all kinds of women, that's okay for them. But you let the wife even look at a man, oh my gosh, that's a big no-no. And if they're caught cheating, they'll kill him. Oh yeah, they'll kill him. There's no doubt, you do not leave them. They leave you, but you do not leave them. That's the way that those men are. And girls that know anything about those people should know that as a fact. And some of them guys, they're like Adonis. I mean, good looking. I mean, I'm telling you, but I'm not saying they're all like that, but every single one I've met were like that. So, I don't know, you know, it's just the way they are. The man is everything and the woman is nothing.
Well,
that's the way it is.
What were the differences in women's roles in France when you were there and in the U.S.? Were they different?
But no, it's about the same. Well, the thing is, when I was there, now you have to remember, times were different. Even here, back then, the man was the master of the house. He's the one that went on at work and everything. A woman back then couldn't even get a loan in her own name. And women stayed home. They were housewives. Okay? They stayed home, and that's the way it was, and they didn't care. They didn't mind. Some women worked, but not like today. Of course, life was not as expensive either. I mean, you could have a nice house and stuff with just a man working, you know? But today, if you want a nice house, unless the man makes $100,000 a year, both have to work. You both have to work if you want to have anything at all. That's how time changed. So.
Well, you worked when you first got over here, right?
No, I didn't, because I was having babies. I was busy having babies, so I didn't work until my youngest child was 3. So I didn't start working until 1965. And I came here in 56, so I 9 years after, you know, I had my children. And then I went out and got a job and worked for a while, and then got laid off from Boeing, so then we came back here, then I didn't work for a while. Then I went back to work
I went back to work at the bank, that security bank then, which is National City now. In 1969, and I worked there for 9 years, I think, and so. And then we moved down this way, and then I was idle for a couple of years, and then I went to work just right here.
How does the currency differ?
Like 6 francs for $1. But today they have the euro. The euro is basically the same as the American dollar. Yeah.
When you were working at the bank, did it take you a while to kind of get the currency, like the change?
Oh no, because back then when I worked at the bank, I had been in this country for 13 years, you know, so I didn't have any problem. And I'm very good with math.
Oh, you're lucky.
Well, I mean, adding, subtracting, and doing like the exchange with Canadian money, stuff like that, I could do that in my head. But, you know, I'm not going into this algebra, and algebra, forget that. That's Greek to me. I just the basic math. I'm good at that.
What was your earliest memories of the war, World War II?
Okay, my earliest memories of World War II is seeing German soldiers in my house. And, of course, you know, I wasn't afraid of them because I was just a little kid. And my dad was at the war. Then at the beginning of World War II, he was still young enough, so he got called back to go back to war again. And so it was just my mom and me and my grandma. That was my dad's mom. She was a widow. She was with us. She lived with us. And my grandpa, my mom's dad, he lived with us also because he was a widower. But they went their way, and my mom and me, we had to evacuate because we live, like I told you, we live close to the base, and we had to leave. We had no choice. We had to leave. So we went to Britain, not Great Britain, no, but Britain in France. You know that part that sticks out in the ocean? There,
mm-hmm.
That's Britain. So my mom had cousins there. So we went there. I remember that. And I was like 3 and a half. I remember that. I even remember the dress I wore. I can just close my eyes right now and see myself standing. We had an old truck, and I was standing next to my mom in a truck. There was no seat belts then. And we were following everybody else. I was running away, evacuating. And when we got it was from jumping from the fry pan into the fire because there was no place to go, really. And when we got to my cousins, I remember the German Air Force was tried to kill everybody they could on the road and stuff, with their little plane, you know. And I remember my mom threw me behind a big rock. I remember that. And the bullet from the plane was about like 5 inches above my head. Boom. I almost got killed that day. Well, because they were killing everybody that, that's the way it was. They would just see a bunch of people there. They would come, they would wait for school to let out. When I started going to school, well, I went to school for a very short time, and they had to close the school. They were waiting for the kids to come out of school and with the machine guns from the plane. Boom, boom. I spent almost an entire evening in a ditch with my friends. Every time we raised our head, they were waiting. So we had to wait until dark, and then we ran home. And that's the last day I went to school. My mother said, that's it, it's not worth it.
So did you understand why at that age? Like, what was going on?
Oh yeah, well, you grow up fast in the war.
especially when you don't have any food, you have to go steal if you want to eat, you know, stuff like that. So I, my girlfriend and I, we, I was about like six, seven years old by then. And we used to go and chase the chickens and see if we could grab one. Well, we didn't care who owns them. I mean, you know, we had to eat. We had not, no food because the German took them all, took all the food. The only time that we ate good is when Germans would come to our house, make my mother cook. And you didn't say no. You did what you were told. Or you were dead, as it was. I mean, they want your bed, get out. We are sleeping in your bed, and that's the way it was. That's why a lot of, when I see sometimes kids that tattoo the swastika on themselves, and they don't have a clue of what that means. They don't have a clue. They don't know. The aura that you're not, that you can't talk back. On the sidewalk, you're walking on the sidewalk, and an officer, a German officer, would come on the same sidewalk towards you. You better get off. You get off. Otherwise, they had their leather strap like that used to carry. They would hit you across the face, would if not shoot you, depending what mood they were in.
You said you remember D-Day and the liberation?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that was great. Oh, that was great. All the matter of fact, my girlfriend and I, we were the first two in the village that saw the first American platoon coming out of the woods. But we didn't know they were Americans. We never saw Americans. We knew what Germans looked like, Canadian and British. We knew what they looked like. But we never seen Americans, see? So we were picking berries, because it was in June. We were picking blackberries, wild blackberries. And all of a sudden we see all these guys coming out of the woods, and we went, okay, we're looking, you know, and we were very careful, we didn't know. And I said, my girlfriend, they're not German because they don't look like German, but I said, that doesn't mean nothing, because sometimes Germans disguise themselves, you know, to look like something else, you know. So I said, we wait. So they're coming towards us, right? And the first guy, I remember, he had dark hair, and he had a little black mustache, and he had a radio on his back. I remember like it was yesterday. And he says, come here, see? Well, a German, he said, come and sit here. And I thought, that sounds like German. He says, chocolate, you know. I haven't had a candy bar, I didn't even know what chocolate tasted like. Didn't even know. But we knew it was good, you know. Chocolate, oh, well, when you're a kid, say, oh, I don't care. Because we were told not to accept any goodies from the Germans. A German soldier told my mom that. Do not accept candy, cookies, or anything from my comrades, he would say. Because some of them are poisoned. Oh, yeah. So I would never touch it. And I thought, oh my gosh, okay, well, let me see. We got closer and closer, and he's swinging his Hershey candy bar in a brown wrapper. He's swinging that at me. Oh, gee, that looks good. Ooh, I want that. So he said, come here. He said, American. So in French, you say American. He's American. We're so happy, so I ran and grabbed the candy bar and we're booking it, and then we're going back to my house, you know, and I'm yelling at the top of my lungs, Mom, the Americans are here. But there was German snipers up in the trees, everywhere. So the guy next door, you weren't allowed to have a flag up, unless it was a German flag with a swastika on it, or nothing. You weren't allowed to have the French flag up, or any flag. So the neighbor, he heard that. Well, he knew they had landed on D-Day. They knew they had landed, but they didn't think they were that far in, see? But anyways, he raised the flag, the French flag and the American flag, and oh my gosh, you get shot for doing that, you know? My mom, she put her hand on my mouth, shut up. She said, don't you know they're American? I said, look what they gave me. We've never seen nothing like that before. And she looked, and made in the USA, you know. And she said, oh my gosh. She said, they are here. So everybody's running out of their houses. and so happy and all that, and all the German at the field day that day, picking out people, and there were a lot of people died that day, but people didn't care. It did. You were so happy. We're finally free. So about 3 days before that, now my dad was home by then. 3 days before that, we had a Panzer tank, a German, that ran out of gas right by our house. And they come, the guy come, and they knew the American had landed, so they were running, all right? And they were young guys. And the one spoke pretty good French, and he told my dad, he said, here, he said, our guns, they put their rifle, their machine gun, everything at my dad's feet. He says, their knives, their bayonet, their everything. He says, here, that's all our weapon. He says, we need to hide this tank. He says, please put us up. He said, we'll wait for the Americans. He said, we're giving up. He said, it's over. He says, I don't want to get killed. He says, we're done. So they gave my dad all their, and my dad said, well, you can't stay here. He said, well, is there a farm closer? We could stay there. And my dad said, sure. So I went with them. I thought it was so cool. And so we went down a little ways, and there was a farm there. So my dad asked the owner, he said, well, there's those guys. He says, they have no weapons or nothing. He said, okay, they're going to wait for the Americans. They should be here in a couple of days. So I said, yeah, you know. So they laid in on the straw, you know, with the cows and everything else. They just waited. So when the Americans came, I remember they come to my house in the Jeep. And I'm sure one of them was an officer, I don't know. And they had an interpreter. And they asked my dad if my dad knew where German soldiers were hiding. And my dad says, yeah, I know. He said, that tank, the crew of that tank, but he said, they're not hiding. He said, they're waiting for you. So he said, don't go in there with guns blazing, you know. He said, they're not armed. He says, here's all their stuff right here. Their grenade, their everything. He said, it's all here. And so my daddy said, I'll show you. So I went. So, hand the hold. I mean, put your hands on your head in German. So they're all walking out like this with their hands up. I felt sorry for them. I was a little girl, you know. I felt sorry. They were nice. You know, they were nice guys. I mean, they weren't, you know. And then the one guy had a chain around his neck with a, like a, some kind of medallion or something, and one of the GIs took it. And I thought, how mean. Well, you know, I was a little girl, and then, you know, war is bad, but they didn't hurt him or anything. You know, they just took him prisoners, and that was that. And that was cool. But the one that scared me, we had two SS. No, those are something else. Those were the regular German soldiers, they were cool. You know, they didn't want to be in a war. They had no choice. They were drafted. They had family, they had kids and everything else. They didn't want to get killed either, you know. But the SS were the bad ones. Dressed in black with a silver S and the skull and bone on the thing there. Them guys would kill their own mother. They were so brainwashed. Oh my gosh. They were bad. And we had about 2 days before that tank came. They had bicycles. They were running. And they stopped at our house. They wanted something to drink and stuff. And my dad hated them so bad. I heard my dad tell my mom, he says, they were tired, so they're sleeping outside on the ground. It was a nice day. My dad, he said, I should go ahead and kill them. I should kill them. My mom talked him out of it. She said, oh my God, don't. She said, what if you miss? They'll kill us all. Because they were bad. The SS were bad. Even the regular German soldier was scared to death of them. They were bad. So that was kind of scary. But I remember when they came up that hill on their tanks, the Americans, throwing cigarettes and gum, candy, chocolate bars. We were standing there with our apron out like this, you know. Taking it all, my gosh, it was like, you don't even know what it's like. It's, everybody was in a state of euphoria that, unbelievable. it's to be free. And that's why people, yeah, the war, this, the war, that, yeah, but it takes a war to keep freedom. You can't just not. Because these people here don't have a clue. They don't have a clue what it is to be under occupation. Like they say, oh, Iraq is under our occupation. Oh, please, that is not even close to being occupation, trust me. Occupation, you have to have black curtains on your windows. They could not see light from the outside. You weren't allowed to have a radio in your house. There was no TVs then. You weren't allowed to have a radio. If you were caught with a radio, the only station we could listen to was the BBC from England to keep us up on the war. If you woke up with a radio in your house, they would take the man of the house, probably shoot him, take him prisoners and send him to labor camps, whatever. Oh yeah, it was a very severe punishment. If you were caught outside after dark, you better have the right papers. I've got my dad's papers at home. Yeah, you better have the right papers. Otherwise, they have the right to shoot you on sight or take you prisoner, whichever pleased them at the time. That's occupation. As far as food went, you only ate what the Germans didn't want.
What did you guys eat?
Do you know what was a treat? Get this, a treat for me. Was a piece of dry bread, stale at that, with lard on it. And lard was it was a luxury if you could find it. That was a treat. You could pay me to eat that stuff today, but that was a treat. So I know what it's like to be occupied by a foreign power. That's occupation. And you can do nothing. You're a prisoner in your own house, basically. And that's you can talk back. You talk back, they shoot you. There you go. I've talked to people, you know, that I've known over the years, and oh, well, that would have been me. I said, you would have done nothing, or you would have been dead. Here you go. I said, you don't know. I said, you're spoiled in this country. You don't even know what it's like. You don't know. Yeah. But see, like in Iraq right now, that's why they want us to get out. Well, yeah, they want us to get out. Or people, well, my son is over there. Well, nobody could put a gun to his head to make him go over there because there is no draft in this country. You join the military, it's on your own. You don't have to. And my son was Desert Storm in 91. My only son. Hey, I could have appealed and make him stay here. You know what he said to me? He says, if you ever do that, I disown you. He says, I'm an American and I will fight for my country. If it's meant for me to die, then I'll die. I'll die proud. There you go. And people, what? Nobody put a gun to his head to join up. You join in the military, you sign on the dotted line, guess what? There is a possibility that you may have to go to war someday. They tell you that, and you know that. Nobody forces you to go. So, well, I'm a patriot 100%, and these people here that protest against this, and I can't stand them. I'm sorry, I can't stand them because they don't have a clue of what those people in the Middle East are about. And if we get out of there, they're going to rebuild and they're going to kill us all. You can count on it. You can count on it. I'm sorry, but maybe I sound prejudiced. Well, okay, so be it. You know, they make their bed, they have to lay in it. So there. And if you don't like the laws in this country and you're from another country and you don't like it here, guess what? See ya. Go back home. Stay in your country then. You know? You don't like the law here, say,
Like they say, you don't like the heat, get out of the kitchen. Boom.
Okay, thanks.
And it's 100% American, so they're with an accent. Okay, well, I hope you get an accent.